come to our attention that a mysterious force is loose somewhere in outer space.
Welcome to Talk Tank.
Hello, you have reached the Talk Tank, the official LSE entrepreneur podcast, where we delve into the minds of those who think, live, and breathe outside the box. I'm Julian, and I will be your host for today. Entrepreneurship and leadership is the creation of value through innovative ideas and collaboration. And in this series, we look beyond just profit. We interview social changemakers who are leading us to a brighter tomorrow. Today, I'm talking to Thorsten Schreiber. He's a serial social entrepreneur and a climate activist who's tuning in from Chad, where he's working currently with the UNHCR and local authorities to further electrify Africa. In 2014, he co-founded Africa Green Tech, which brings sustainable green energy to rural areas in Africa, creating opportunities for businesses to flourish while reducing the need for diesel power plants. We have a fascinating conversation on social impact, about the inspiration and incredible experiences from projects in Africa, why it's time to act now, and how to make the world a greener place.
Thorsten, thank you for coming to the Talk Tank. I'm very excited to talk to you today.
Thank you, me too.
Okay, at this point, I already introduced you briefly, but maybe you can give us a little introduction, a little pitch about yourself, about Africa Green Tech, and how you make the world a better place.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to be with you. My name is Thorsten Schreiber. I'm 48 years old, married, and three children. And I'm the founder of Africa Green Tech. And we developed, based on a social business operation model, a containerized holistic solution for providing basic infrastructure in rural areas. Mostly in the global south, but especially in sub-Saharan Africa, where, as you know, 600 million people don't have an reliable access to clean energy, water, and cooling facilities. And this, called by us Impact Site, we provide a measurable and strong change for people in these rural areas.
Okay, you already touched on many topics we hopefully come back to, but one thing I want to start with is what we emailed about. You're currently not in Germany. I think most of the people who are probably listening to the podcast might still be confined to their home, sitting somewhere in COVID times, lockdown times, but you're currently in Chad.
Yes.
And if I remember and read it correctly, you worked there together with the UNHCR on a new project in the Lake Chad region. Correct me if I'm wrong, but in a refugee camp, and I think it's an incredible story. You wrote about it as well in your review from last year, but maybe you can just tell us a bit about this project, what you're currently doing there, and yeah, about your impressions with it.
Yeah, I think about the UNHCR and the situation in Lac Chad, we can make our own podcast, but in short words, the Chad region, the Lac Chad region is a place where four countries have borders to, and the sea, the Lac was in the last 50 years it lost about 90% of its water, and this creates a lot of problems for the people living there and trying to fish. And in the region they're living 650,000 people, and 300,000 are on leave, are refugees.
Isn't it a special project for you because you're working on something to solve climate change in a way, and you are faced with so many refugees that are fleeing from it?
Yeah, this tackles a lot of points what personally are important for myself, as I see myself as a climate change activist. The situation over there is in different ways very touching, because we see that climate change has already this heavy consequences on people's life. And the other hand, I see that with our solutions, what we developed, we can help. And so you have this feeling of you want to do, you want to help, you want to step in. But on the other hand, you have this difficulties also with security reasons, because as I said, Boko Haram is very active in this place, and this makes the work very, very difficult. But yeah, we have a concrete project now, what is also part of the mission what we have in Chad, because also the UNHCR has its facility over there. And I had the chance to discuss with the United Nations about their situation from their camps. So many people don't know, but the United Nations burn more than $1.2 billion in gasoline every year in their missions. So this is the third project where we try to transform the diesel genset from the UNHCR for their stuff with a 2 megawatt PV park. We really start here a huge energy transition, I can say. And that's why I'm also here. I left my family in Germany. I took some of my technicians, and we are working on these projects in the moment.
Okay, I mean, for me, there's not that much to say now. I think one is definitely congrats already. And second, I feel like me as an interviewer, I'm probably kind of useless because you already touched on the diesel generator problem and kind of your reasons for starting this. Because I figure what you just told us is an incredible way, your projects in chat, to kind of start this off. But what I want to talk about now is, as you said already, kind of the reasons why that motivated you to start Africa Green Tech. And yes, I read, or like I listened to one of the videos where you kind of introduce Africa Green Tech, and you talked about this first diesel power plant you visited and where you figured, okay, there's such a big need for change. Maybe you can elaborate a bit on this like starting point and your initial motivation.
Yeah, for me personally, this sustainable part of my life started 2009. Classic, as you heard from many social entrepreneurs, with the birth of my daughter. What was in October 2009. And after this, I start really thinking what world I will leave her laterally. So I was active in this in a political party between 2009 and 2012. And 2012, I founded the green crowdfunding platform Betterverse together with my co-founder, Patrick Meinels. And part of this personal development, I met many people like Ernst Ulrich von Weizsäcker, who was also a mentor for us. And I was stepping into this green movement in Germany between 2012 and 2014. And then in 2014, after the political transition in Mali, where we had a civil war, we get invited from the Ministry of Energy because my wife is from Mali. So as part of this meeting in June 2014, I had the chance to visit a 20 megawatt diesel genset, what is from 59, so it's pre-colonialized time. So the French built this genset before the independence of Mali. And this was really incredible, I can say. It was burning 140,000 liters of gasoline per day, and outside we had 45 degrees. And for me, this was like I just can't describe it. It was touching me a lot. It was making me thinking a lot. And this was the moment where I really decided to change this. And this was the moment where my personal campaign against diesel genset had started. So I know that after this, I will really stop all these diesel gensets in Africa. And this was the moment where everything started. And I was going back to Germany, and I talked to my partners and to my friends, to my family. I said, look, I will go to Africa and stop diesel gensets. So June 2014.
I think that's a very, very inspiring story. But what would follow for me now is being in Africa, seeing these problems, and then going back to Germany and actually building a solar container and bringing it to Africa is still probably kind of a big step. Maybe you can tell us a bit about how you started with the technology. Maybe you can touch on how the technology works, and then how kind of Africa Green Tech started off in your first project.
Yes, for sure. So first of all, we started, as I said, in the home country of my wife, in Mali. After the civil war, we electrified the birth village of the transition president, Jean-Claude Traoré. On this time, it was very difficult for Mali also, because all the people, the humanitarian aid, everybody left the country. And it was a really hard time for people there. And so we decided to start in this village called Murja. And on this time, as I was also co-founder of the platform BetterVest, I decided to finance the first pilot project also over crowdfunding, what nobody made before, because crowdfunding so far was a new, I would say a new movement coming from the States with Kickstarter. And in Germany, we had not so much experience with crowdfunding. This was mostly projects in Germany. And so everybody was right curious if it will work to finance a project in Africa with German investors. But yeah, we tried. In March 2015, we started the first crowdfunding platform for an African project. It was so far really a new thing. Today we have hundreds of platforms and projects for Africa, but our project was the first. We was really the pioneer. And yeah, we even had a record because in 48 hours, the project was financed. And this was the beginning of this crazy story. After this success, we tried first hard to implement the pilot project in a technical way because we had two obstacles. One, we have to show the proof of concept technically so that the solar installation will work and produce energy after the transport. And on secondly, we have to show that it's financial sustainable because this was much harder than, I don't know, if you if the audience know exactly the way we do our business. We are not donation based. We have a social business philosophy following the teachings from Nobel Peace Laureate mentor Mohamed Yunus. The principle of a social entrepreneur follows on one hand the entrepreneur approach, and on the other hand the focus on the best possible impact on the triple bottom line. So we look for an ideal balance between profit, people, and nature. And this in an environment like Mali was so far not that easy because electricity in sub-Saharan Africa is mostly 80 to 100% subsidized by international donors. So coming up with a model where we have asked for revenues and asked the people to pay their electricity was so far really difficult, and but we made it, and today we have more than 20 villages, and our work is not only developmental, but at the same time we challenge decades of international development aid practices. So in principle, we are fighting on all fronts for an urgently need change. But back to your question, in the meantime, we could prove that it is possible to supply hundreds of thousands of people with clean electricity and clean drinking water with such a sustainable solution. With the further development and the many pieces of information we receive daily from our locations, we are constantly evolving. And today we are there to reach a large part of upcoming solar revolution in Africa with our system. And our vision is to supply at least 3 million people with 100% renewable electricity in the next years. And yeah, with the CHAT project, we are on a really good way to achieve these goals very soon.
Let me unpack this a bit, everything you said. I think touching the first thing, I was very inspired when I saw these videos on your website. A couple of years ago when I first looked at your company, of these like solar containers on the trucks traveling through African desert in a way and then reaching the villages, and then these like moments where the first container kind of folds up and people gather around it and celebrate it like a holiday. And then the second part regarding the business model, I think we'll try to touch on this later, because I think it's a very insightful, interesting story, and like how we can build up business models, how we should build up business models, at least in your perspective. And then, yeah, I think, I mean, I saw it on your website, you could find it online, all the projects you started across Mali and Niger as well, and the countries that are coming up. But maybe just to conclude this, might be a hard question, but maybe you have from one of these impact sites, as you call them, a favorite or most memorable project, maybe beside of the very first one?
Yes. I think I have one, and that's Kai. It's a village in southern eastern Mali, where the young people built their own network with more than 500 poles. You have to know, in the beginning of our venture in Mali, we was specialized on electrifying villages with an existing distribution network. So from old projects from the World Bank, they in Mali, they had more than 200 villages provided electricity by a diesel genset. But since 10 years, 15 years, everything was stopped because they couldn't make it. And so they had an old existing network, and there it was quite easy to repair the network and then bring the container and plug the container and then and make a light. So we focused in the beginning on these kind of villages. And but in one of our opening sessions in one of these first villages with a network, there was many mayors coming from other villages to attend the ceremony. And there was a young, very committed mayor asked me if I also can give him one of our containers. And then I asked him, do you have also one of these old electricity grids? And he said, no, they are a village without anything. So as more as a joke, I told him, if you build your electricity grid, I will finance a solar tanner and will bring to your village. So then after the ceremony, everybody goes home and I forget this story. And 6 months later, he called me and he said that the young man in his village and all old people together, they was saving their money, they pooled their money, and they are in the beginning to really build their own grid with their own hands. So they used eucalyptus trees, what they have in this area, many of them. And they bought some cables and they already started to build their own network. So, and he asked me, do you will help your word? So do you come with your container? Because in some weeks we are ready to receive the container. And I was really just crying because this was for me such an incredible moment. And yeah, then in September 2018, I brought the container with me. And we celebrated with all the villagers from this area 3 days and two nights. And this was the first time in Africa that a village had built its own electricity grid. And later on, it was still difficult because there was any regulation for a case like that. So the state of Mali refused that we running this grid owned by the village people. But so I looked for another finance possibility and I bought the grid from the villages. But it showed that it was a proof how strong the will of the people can be to take their own destiny in their own hands. And for me, that's a wonderful proof of the meaningfulness of my work. So I can clearly say this was one of my favorite and most memorable projects.
That's a wonderful story. I would have asked you a bit about your day-to-day life or like your last year, but let's talk about something else following from that, because I think it's a very inspiring story how through in a way word of the mouth your ideas or your project spread. And I saw in your recap you wrote about that there was a little piece on your work on a news channel in Chad last year, and then you write that afterwards you couldn't help because there were so many applications coming in and so many people who wanted to join in. Maybe you can give us one, tell us a bit more about this story. And then second, how do you plan to scale up and how do you want to reach even more people? How do you want to reach these like 3 million you talked about before?
Well, that's different questions. Coming for the question of reaching people and inspiring people. I mean, you and I, we met on a summit in Mannheim so far. And I think also your university invited me at this time to inspire a little bit the young people. I think we have to split this in two parts. I think in the global north, we have the situation that young people have, they're searching for sense. So they have a good education. Normally they are not hungry. They are not afraid to lose their life by killing by a terrorist, something like that. So after the study, they look for a meaningful work. And this is not that easy because in our industrial world in the global north, everything is about profits and making money and the traveling and things like that. In the global South, young people have a very other reality. So they need to survive. And in Africa, our project or our company is bringing real hope. So young men and young women bring us into the situation that we could change their life in a way that they get food, they get education, they get better health. And I think that's one of our biggest achievements, that Africa Green Tech is for young people in Africa something like a hope bringing company, and especially in the rural areas. So for that we are really proud, because if Ida and I, we go here in the village, many young people already know us from Facebook and also looked our videos at YouTube, and they receive us in a way that they really are hopeful that we can change their life in a positive way. And this is, on the other hand, a very huge responsibility, coming back to your question, with these applications. And there was in November, we had an audience with the president of Chad, and this comes in the 8 o'clock news in the evening. And I remember we come back to the hotel, and people stand up and applauding where we coming into the into the restaurant. And in this night, we received more than 1,000 applications over Facebook Messenger from people from Chad. Even the director of the national air company was sending his candidature. And we need perhaps 100, but you can remember how many people dream to work with HET for this change. And as I said, it's a strong responsibility, because I cannot provide jobs for everybody in Chad. But with our systems, and if we get successful, if we scale up in these villages, we will provide jobs for many people who then get their own little enterprise. That's our strength, as you know. We create electricity for productive use. So people can open a barber shop or a tailor shop, and mostly these young people can then create their own income. And that's a very good story for us also.
What would be interesting for me is just this idea that in a way you're, or not in a way, but you're a social venture or social company for profit. So how do you see your impact, and why is it so important that this is still has this economic incentive behind it?
Yeah, I strongly believe that humanitarian aid is needed in all places where are catastrophic situations, like after a hazard, or if after people flee from terrorists, there you need support from the international community. When it comes to changes in, for example, a village where you have an economy, but it's only needed to bring basic infrastructure, you can have a strong outcome if you work with the people on their home, where they know each other, where they are settling. And if you help them to stay by, tackle the problems better from climate change through technology, by solar or water solutions, cooling solution, you can hold them where they are. And I think this is the main issue, what we try to find solutions. If you donate them something, they have not that value. If they pay for something, even if it's not much, but then they take care about the technology. And that's, I think, the differentiator, that we decided to being an operator. So we don't sell solar equipment or something. We provide the services. So we sell electricity. And we sell cooling space. Water is for us not a revenue stream, but that we also try to finance with donations. But people pay for the distribution of water, so it's a monthly fee that they have access to this water. And there we have a mixed model. But for electricity and for the cooling solution, they pay because they also make money out of it. So productive use of energy brings also revenues for them. So they can share parts of their revenues for the electricity provider. That's fair.
Okay, let's go from this towards, in a way, the other side of the financial coin and talk about attraction of investors in especially then Europe and how you, on the one hand, incentivize them. And you said before, you talked about your first project that you started through your crowdfunding platforms. But as far as I understand, now you have like a few ways of financing these projects. And I mean, on the one hand, I could go on the website and become part of your projects. But I think more and more bigger or more institutionalized investors join in. I think at the beginning, you mentioned a couple of times a few years ago that institutional investors are very reluctant usually in terms of how safe is our capital, how can we make sure that this is an actual available investment. So maybe you can just touch on this, on your experiences with that and how it changed over the last years, maybe.
Yeah, well, I think this is, it's in our situation, it's special because the Sahel region is one of the most dangerous places to invest. And basically, institutional investors are very afraid to invest in zones where terrorists or political instability is and corruption is very strong, and all these countries where we are, we have these problems. So this is the main thing. From our business model, we have this mobile container solutions, what gives a base security for the investor, because we can move the assets in a case of emergency or in a case of non-payment. That's also one of the reasons why we developed our solutions in mobile containerized. But your other question is in a huge perspective, especially family offices and institutional investors start now to really look what happened with the money they invest. So is the investment doing good or doing bad, for example, for the environment? And thanks to the Sustainable Development Goals, we have now also an international framework where you can measure impact based on the 17 different sustainable goals. We can today measure 11 of 17 Sustainable Development Goals in our daily works. And the outcome and the results are, yeah, I can say tremendous, because we see today already that in our villages, we created more than 500 small enterprises, and these small enterprises, in average, bring 50 families to feed 50 families. So you see that this is a very strong and positive impact. And we are very proud that our solution really helps on the ground, and that helps us now to show investors that it's a good thing to invest in our company or in our projects. Both is possible. We have investment opportunities for equity investors who really want to join us in the company. And we have project finance on the base of our daughter companies. So if you want to invest, for example, in villages in Niger, you can invest in AGT Niger. Or you want to invest in the big picture, you also can invest in the holding in Germany.
We're getting towards the end, but one question following from that I really want to ask is something that just follows from what you post on your LinkedIn, from what you do with your kind of political activist background. And I remember you reposted one article about from the Milken Institute on future of ESG investments. And there was just one thing that sticked with me. I think that 0.27% of the fund value from Goldman goes towards ESG investments. Yet on the other hand, we have an incredible movement in society. I mean, especially with young people, if you look at Fridays for Futures, etc. Do you see, how's your view on the future in terms of, I think there's one quote where I can raise here, is just put your money where your mouth is.
Yes, that's the double facing of our society. That's the reason why I'm in Chad and not in Germany in the moment, because it really nerves me that people talk a lot and say something like we have to do and we must, and we are really in a moment of worldwide, in a moment where we have no time. We have no time to wait. There is so much liquid and so much cash in the market. The financial market is floated. And people investing in stock markets, in I don't know, in digital business models, what don't change anything. And that makes me really angry that people, it's not only me, also other social entrepreneurs I know, who really can transfer every dollar into a positive impact on the ground, are not financed well. Why people don't float us also with money? And as you said, the numbers 0.27%. What's that about? Is this really what we want to invest? Do we want to invest less than 1% in a better future? Why it's not 50% or 60, or from my side 100% what we invest in positive projects, positive impact? And that's really makes me upset and frustrate me a lot. And sometimes I post this also on LinkedIn, because I don't like if people talk about sustainability and what we have to do, and then they step into their Porsche Cayenne and riding whatever. I'm a guy who is really walk the talk. Nix blah blah, it's one of my hashtags, or Unfuck the World, as you know. And it's time to act. It's time to act with. Everybody has his responsibility for a better future, and I will not wait. That's the reason why I'm here. I'm in Chad, where it's really difficult. It's one of the most dangerous places, but here, every minute what I do, I have a change, and I have hundreds of people I can help, bringing some more hope. And on the end, I'm also an egoist, because I don't wait for others. I just step into the heavy places, and it feels good to be here and not in this bubble of COVID-19 in Europe at the moment, where people are waiting for something. I don't know for what they wait.
All right. You talk about, not talking the talk, but like actually doing it. So let's just follow up with this for all of our listeners, for everyone who's interested in this. Maybe you can just quickly touch about you as a facilitator for this change. How could we get involved in your projects? How could we get involved in Africa Green Tech and the investments? Follow your work, just as a brief version of doing a little promotion for yourself.
Yeah, well, I think it's not only, well, first of all, you can invest in one of our crowdfunding projects. There are different ones. In the moment, we have one in Germany, where you can be part of the holding company. In end of April, beginning of May, we will finance the UNHCR project here with a debt finance. So this will be a good possibility. But on the end, I think if you ask me that way, it's good if you talk about it. Just talk about what we discussed today. Discuss with your friends. Discuss with people around you, and change the mindset. I think this is what would be the biggest wish for me, that we really start to act and reducing meat, reducing flights, reducing CO2 emissions, and try to change our own lives. I think that's a very, you can start with yourself. And this message was very strong once I met Yunus. He told me the change begins with yourself. And if you are not ready to change your own life, you can't ask others to do it. And that's the way my life is also, that I try to, first of all, do it myself and then ask others to follow. And I think this is a message what I can share with you. Making podcasts, share good ideas, and
Two things on that. I think my professor will love what you just said, because this is what he tries to instill in us, at least in my course. But then a second thing, which directly from this since you just had so many inspiring words, where do you take your inspiration from? And do you have a role model or someone you looked up to while building Africa Green Tech or your first crowdfunding platform?
Yeah, I met mentors in my life. As I said, one of my biggest mentors and inspiring people is Mohamed Yunus. I had a great chance to meet him several times and take time with him for some hours. And the other side, what is inspiring me a lot, our clients here in these villages. So people who has in our way of thinking from a European perspective, nothing, but they are so full of friendship and sharing. And this inspires me a lot, how people who have nothing materially, but has such a strong belief on life, and this inspires me a lot. Also, and the third thing, well, it's my family, my own family, my wife. Ida is a very strong woman. She is the African part of our company. I'm the green tech part, and she could say, hey, we are in Germany, we have our children, we can stay in our house, we make our things. But no, she takes me and we go to villages in these terrorist areas, and we go to into the houses of the people, we talk to them, and that's inspiring me a lot. So that she is going back to change something, even if she if it's not normal, if you have a good life. Because here, if you look to the young African people who are from the better families, they try to move out of Africa, go to Canada or go to Europe and have a better life there. And Ida choose to go back and give back something. And this is also a big inspiration every day for me.
Okay, you talked about, I mean, I think especially the last words are very interesting, how your wife inspires you, but maybe a bit about yourself in this regard. If you could give your younger self an advice, what would it be? And would you have listened to that?
My younger self. I think everything what happened in destiny. So I don't regret anything. I think if you are young, you have to take your lessons. And important is that you go out with a clear result and always try to be a good person. So you have always the choice to do something bad or do something good, and choose always the good. Then you feel better if you get older. And thanks God, I doing that way. And in my business, you can imagine, if you are in a country like Africa, you meet people who have gold mines, who are drug dealers, and they come to you and say, hey, we can make business. And then to say no and say, look, I'm not interested in weapons. I'm not interested in drugs. I'm not interested in prostitution. I'm not interested in gold or in destroying the environment. This is a really difficult choice, because these people have mostly the power in these countries. And if you say no to them, they sometimes take it bad.
Okay. I mean, one more thing. I know it's a very big question, but I think we talked about a couple of these things. Let's focus on the European side, because I think in Africa there are many topics we could touch. But is there one thing in our European society or Western society that you would want to change or that should be changed?
Yeah, this arrogance that people think they are better because they have a good education and they have a good revenue. And I remember audience with the president of Senegal 2 years ago. It was part of the G20, and I was invited. I was sitting next to him, and Angela Merkel asked him what Germany could learn from Senegal, and the audience was laughing. So this arrogance of the white people in the room, like what even this question could be, what Germany can learn from an African country. And I was really right curious, because the president of Senegal, he took some seconds, he didn't say something. And then he talked very strong. And he said, look, you can learn from us how being kind with older people. And that's all he said. And then the whole audience was silent because nobody really get the message. But I can give you the the background. Here in Africa, if you are old, you live with your family until the day you die. And if you look at Europe, what we do with our elders, we put them into Altersheim, senior residence,
elderly homes,
homes, and they get treated very bad there. And Sundays you go there and you drink a tea for 2 hours. And here in Africa, I remember the grandma of Ida, my wife, died last year. She was blind already for 20 years, but every morning she was making potatoes, and she died in the hands of their grandchildren and in peace. And she was so lucky. And I remember this woman every morning, she was sitting there and making potatoes, and this dignity, what people have here with more generations in one household. I think that it's one good example what we can learn from cultures in the Global South. And hopefully this is one answer of your question, but I don't know if this was your question.
No, that's a beautiful story. Thank you very much for sharing this. And let's finish off with one of our Talk Tank signature questions. If you could invite someone to talk to you on the podcast, who would you invite?
I would invite Hannes Jennecke, because Hannes is a guy who also say what he thinks, and he's very clear. And I love his way of work, his what he's doing against climate change and for the gorillas and for the rainforest. And he is one of the persons also who inspiring me. So if you want to invite somebody for a podcast, it would be Hannes Jennecke.
Okay, Thorsten, thank you very, very much. This was a very inspiring conversation. I think we had many topics we touched. I would have loved to talk more about it with you, but maybe we should do that another day. And I think for everyone who's listening, I can just recommend following you on all the social medias and looking at Africa Green Tech, following the company. And yeah, thank you for your inspiring work, and good luck in the next weeks in Chad. And yeah, I'm excited to see where the journey will get you and how your projects will develop over the next years.
Okay, thank you, Julian.
Well, to conclude this, I can only recommend to follow Africa Green Tech and support their work. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week, and leave a message after the beep.